Good morning and welcome to the Community Review. I'm Josefa Salinas, your host. We're in March and that's Women's History Month. We got a real special woman we're talking about today. We're going to celebrate a mom and also an author. She wrote the book, The Boy Who Knew Too Much. It's coming out very soon. And the movie rights of this remarkable story have already been purchased, which means there's a movie on the way. So you're going to want to get the book ahead of time. Read it. So then when you see the movie, you can really put a visual to what you've read. Now, what makes this story so incredibly extraordinary? Here's an excerpt from the book. Mommy, I used to be a tall baseball player. Well, yes, you will be a tall baseball player someday, is Mom's reply. And then with a look of exasperation, he stomps his foot, her son, and yells, No! I was a tall baseball player, tall like Daddy. So this automatically piques your interest, like, what? What's going on here? Kathy, please tell me. This is all about your son. And tell me, at the tender age of 2, he began having vivid memories of being a baseball player from back in the 20s and 30s. Take me there. This must have just blown you away.
It was quite an extraordinary journey, and one that I didn't believe myself for quite a while, until so many things lined up and I was finally convinced that there was something to it.
Okay. So how does a mom start hearing these kinds of things from their child and start to believe that maybe there's something going on here? What was it that made you think that, well, wait a minute, there's no way my son could actually know this?
Right. Well, the first thing that was odd to start out with was he had this crazy obsession with baseball from the time that he could walk. And his father's from Germany, so there's no baseball in our house at all. But he found it through the neighborhood kids and walked around with a bat his entire childhood wherever he went. He wore a baseball uniform wherever he went, cleats to preschool, and would not wear anything else. And he played baseball for 8 to 10 hours a day, begging us to throw him pitches. So even prior to him making that comment that you just talked about, it was already pretty unique. And I took a video one day and put it on YouTube. And Adam Sandler happened to see it and ended up casting him in a movie when he was 2 years old called That's My Boy, where he plays a little baseball player. That was like a baseball playing cameo role. And then that age, right before he turned 3, is just when all of his, you know, past life memories that he claimed started to explode right around that time.
So let's talk a little bit about that explosion. Now, what made you think it was a past life memory?
Okay, when we were in Boston filming the movie, I took him to a baseball game, and it was only the second baseball or third baseball game he'd ever attended, and he'd never watched television. And he happened to see this giant picture of Babe Ruth and got really, really upset, like to the point that we had to leave the stadium. He started waving his little bat and said, I don't like him. He was mean to me. And at that point, it was just an odd thing, and I kind of put it away in my memory and thought, well, that was strange. It was a little eerie. But when we came back from that trip is when he really got insistent and, you know, said, I used to be tall. I was tall like Daddy. I was a tall baseball player. But it was a comment that he made right after he turned 3. We were in Calabasas at the Mercedes dealership there, and I happened to be in the elevator. And he looked at me and he said, Mommy, this elevator looks like a hotel. And I said, yeah, it kind of does. And he said, when I was a tall baseball player, when I was tall like Daddy, I used to stay in hotels almost every night. And I kind of went along with it. I said, really? I said, did you fly on airplanes? You know, kind of kidding, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, mostly trains. And he'd never been on a train. He'd never played with trains. All he did was play with baseball. Like, he did nothing else that a kid would do at 3 years old. It kept nagging at me. So I would go on the computer, and I looked at Babe Ruth trains. And sure enough, Babe Ruth traveled on trains. And there was no way, even at 8 years old, Christian's now 8, and I don't even think now he would know that baseball players stay in hotels almost every night. It's just not something a kid would ever know or nothing he could have learned on his own.
Okay, so now, all right, so now your curiosity is piqued. You're saying to yourself, okay, my son has some interesting things that he's talking about. At what point did you seek any kind of assistance to try and figure it out?
Right. This is right when I did. It was right when it kind of got my attention, and I sought out the help of two different. First, I went to our pastor because we're Christian, and I said, look, this is happening, and told him the stories. And he sent me an email insinuating that Christian could be possessed by the spirit of a dead person, you know, that this is not a part of our faith, this belief in being reborn. So that kind of sent me in another direction, and I went to the internet, and I found a woman named Carol Bowman who wrote a book called Children's Past Lives. And Carol gave me a lot of advice and told me a lot about this being a very normal pattern for children between the ages of 2 to 6 to speak about a past life. So she gave me the advice to show him pictures, to take pictures of teams that Babe Ruth played with and ask him questions and see if he could provide any information. And then that's when more and more things started coming up for Christian. Our son's name is Christian.
Okay, so so she tells you, you know, yeah, this is a normal thing for 2 to 6-year-olds. So you think, oh, maybe this is just a phase he's going through. But you start showing him pictures of why Babe Ruth?
Babe Ruth, because he had such an incident of not liking Babe Ruth when we were in Boston, when he saw this big photograph, that he carries that even today. He has issues with Babe Ruth, which was really strange to me. I thought, how could a 3-year-old have a visceral reaction to a photograph of
right,
Babe Ruth?
Right,
right. So the first thing I did was I showed him a picture of the 1927 Yankees, and I said, do you see anybody in this photo who might not like Babe Ruth? And he immediately pointed to a player, and I showed him another picture, and he pointed to the same player. And then he said, that's me. And I had no idea who this person was, so I had to go on the internet again and Google, you know, Yankees, dimples, and until I saw photographs and I was able to identify that person as Lou Gehrig. And sure enough, Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth had a falling out and didn't speak for 7 years. They were very good friends and then had a falling out. So it kind of was consistent with his dislike for Babe Ruth.
Wow. Now, okay, so at that point, what did you start thinking to yourself? And what did your husband think about all this?
Right. You know, my husband really wanted me to stop talking about it with him, to make it go away. His advice was, you know, let's just not talk about it, and maybe he won't talk about it anymore. But it was something every night before bed is when it would come up. It wasn't something he talked about all the time, but right before he would fall asleep is when he would come through with these spontaneous memories and say things like, when I was a kid, there was fire in the lights. How there was, like, you know, fire for illumination. Or he'd say, you know, when I was a tall baseball player, we wore metal cleats, but we didn't wear a helmet. We'd come through with all these things. And then one day I showed him photographs of Lou Gehrig's parents, which Carol Bowman had advised me to do once he said, that's me, to the Lou Gehrig photo. And she said, see if he can identify their real names. Give him some fictitious names and then see if he can pick out the real names. And sure enough, he was able to do that. And then the picture of Lou Gehrig's mother, he initially said, Mommy, why weren't you there then? I like you better. And this was when he was 3 years old. And then within minutes, he said, you were her. So that became part of his whole story, that I was the mother when he was Lou Gehrig.
Wow.
That was a strange twist to the story.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so at that point, are you thinking that he's making up some of this, or are you thinking, I better look into this deeper?
You know what? Carol Bowman has some guidelines that help me a lot. And, you know, when kids talk in fantasy, it's more playful. These kids that recall these past lives or speak in this way, it's always very serious, and their tone almost changes, and they almost sound like an adult. And it's really strange. So it's really easy as a parent to identify when your kid is fantasizing and when they're being serious. So because he took it so serious, whenever he would speak about it, I also was very attentive and took it serious, even though my skeptical mind was always at work.
Now, your pastor tried to, I mean, when anybody says possessed, the people always think something evil and dark.
Right.
And I'm sure your pastor was, like, probably trying to poo-poo the whole idea.
Right.
So how did you work through that struggle between faith and what you were being presented with?
Right. You know, one thing that really helped me is I went into kind of a journey of looking at the history of religion, and I really looked at all of the different religions and the history of the Bible, and I even, you know, found that back in 325 AD when Constantine became the emperor and combined church and state, that all of the scriptures in the Bible that referred to reincarnation or rebirth were actually taken out of the Bible. There's still some Gnostic Gospels where Jesus even speaks about rebirth. And by 385, it was a crime punishable by death to even speak about reincarnation. And it kind of gave me some clarity because I thought, why do I feel so guilty when I think about reincarnation? Like, it's like it was always in conflict with my beliefs that I grew up with, right? So what that did by discovering, like, the history of religion and realizing that it's a majority belief in the world. Reincarnation is a majority belief. It's really here in America that we're more, you know, shy away from it. It really freed me up to be able to be a Christian and entertain the idea of reincarnation, that those two things were not mutually exclusive.
Because it's really the spirit that carries on, isn't it? If I have my understanding correct, it's the spirit that carries on. And there certainly have been enough recent movies and books and accountings of people who have passed and then come back.
Correct.
And their discussions about the spirit that, you know, that clearly the soul, your soul.
Correct. And even like Eben Alexander, Dr. Eben Alexander, I don't know if you know his book, Proof of Heaven, but he did the introduction for my book, and he is writing a new book where he looks at all the research on children's past lives from another person that I went to later, who his name is Dr. Jim Tucker at the University of Virginia Medical School, and he's from the Department of Psychiatry and Neurobehavioral Sciences. And there, at that medical school, they've been collecting cases on children's past life memories since 1967, and they've accumulated over 2,500 cases from all over the world. And that medical school also studies near-death experiences, ESP. So it's really all kind of in that same genre.
Wow. So did you actually meet with Dr. Tucker?
I did. He came to our house, and he met Christian, and they played baseball while Dr. Tucker asked him questions. It was when Christian was 5.5 years old, so it was kind of at the end of that window where children have past life memories. And the most remarkable thing happened is Dr. Tucker started asking Christian about when he died, which was something I had never spoken to him about. And he said, "What happened when you died?" And Christian said, "My body stopped working." And he said, "And then what happened?" And he said, "Then I became Christian." And then a second later, he said, "I picked her to be my mom, and then she got old." And Dr. Tucker said, "Where was she when you picked her?" And he said, "She was being born." And then he said, "Where were you when you picked her?" And he said, "In the sky." And this is where I thought Christian could have been making it up, because it wasn't something he'd ever said to me. And then Dr. Tucker said to me that many, many, many of these children who have past life memories also recall choosing their parents, and very specific memories, like some children have been able to say, "I saw them at a pink hotel on the beach," and sure enough, the parents were at the Royal Hawaiian in Waikiki 6 months before the baby was conceived.
Wow. This is all so incredibly fascinating. And at that point, at what point did he stop having these, revelations, or does he still continue with them today?
Yeah. You know, he still talks about it, but what they define it as, like at the University of Virginia, is spontaneous memories. So he doesn't come up with any new memories. And as he got older, as he was around 5.5, 6, he said, "Mommy, it's hard for me to remember now because God gave me a new brain." And it was almost as if when you wake up from a dream and you kind of remember the dream and then it just dissipates and you're trying to grasp at the details and it's gone. It's like that. So we went, when he was 6 years old, we went to New York and we went to Lou Gehrig's gravesite. We went to Lou Gehrig's old house, and the owners became good friends of ours. And he got to really kind of say goodbye in a way. And after that, I'd say once he was 6 years old, he really was in this world of being a new baseball player. He said, "Mommy, I want to be a new baseball player like Matt Kemp, not an old baseball player." So he really looked up to the Dodgers, and we had season tickets, and he became kind of an ambassador to the Dodgers. He threw a first pitch when he was, you know, a couple days after his third birthday. He threw a first pitch that became kind of an iconic thing on YouTube, and he now has 15 million views on YouTube. He became like a little ambassador for the Dodgers, and Tommy Lasorda trots him out to spring training with all the players and has the players play catch with him and stuff. So it's been a really amazing experience all the way around.
And how does he feel about baseball now?
He still plays baseball. He plays on a very competitive team. And they went to the Pony World Series last summer, and Christian pitches. He's left-handed. He also plays shortstop, which, if you know baseball, is kind of unique because that doesn't usually happen for very long.
Right.
There's not too many left-handed shortstops in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
But he actually pitched a perfect game last summer.
Wow.
During his All-Star season, which was kind of cool.
So how did all of this experience affect your family, your faith, and then your life moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, really the message that came through to me loud and clear, even more than the reincarnation message, I mean, that's something we won't really know until we die if reincarnation is the truth. But what it really taught me is that our souls and our consciousness survive the death of our bodies and that we will be reunited with our loved ones. And I think for my family, for my kids, it's just something that now we believe and we know to be true, even though we were taught that before, but now we've actually lived it.
That's amazing. I wonder if every single person is reincarnated or if just some souls actually get reincarnated and others just go on and go to heaven and sit down and chill.
I know. You know what I've learned? I feel like it's a choice because when Christian said, I chose you to be my mom, and then I said to him, I said, do you get to choose if you're a person or an animal? And he said, no, mommy, God chooses that. And he said, but you do get to pick your parents, though. And then he said, but it's not a talking thing because there's no words there. So what I believe is that we go in, you know, once we die, this is my personal belief, and mm-hmm. you can take it or leave it, we go into this spirit world, right? And while we're there, we can see what's happening here with our loved ones on Earth, and we kind of long for those physical sensations, like simple things like eating an ice cream cone, swimming in the ocean, holding the hand of a child. And we long to be back in the physical form, and we go, okay, I'm ready to give this a try again. And we choose our parents, and we come back, and we do it again. So really the message to me also is to really enjoy life, to be less judgmental and more accepting of people, right? Because, you know, my son said it. He said, Mommy, people should be nice to black people because they could come back as a black person in their next life. And this was after we had seen the movie Hidden Figures.
Oh.
And I said, you know what? You're right. And so it's really a message of unity, just to have more compassion towards people that have different beliefs or from different cultures or different races, different ethnicities. So I think the big messages are to enjoy life, you know, that we chose to be here and it's a game and have fun with it.
Very good. Well, continued success. I look forward to getting the book when it comes out. Is there a website for The Boy Who Knew Too Much?
There is. So you can go to theboywhoknewtoomuch.com and there's a great trailer that's about 2.5 minutes long, narrated by Jack Canfield, who wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul. And then there's also, your interview will be on there. I have a press page that has all of the interviews and articles that we've done. You can also watch some of Christian's YouTube videos. But it's theboywhoknewtoomuch.com. And you can also buy the book there.
Absolutely. Well, Kathy Bird, continued success. Blessings to your family and to your son, Christian, and your husband. And thank you for putting a spark of hope out there for people to maybe just, I don't know, I think if you even question some of the concepts that we've talked about here today, do some, you know, research and investigation for yourself into the history of various religions and see, especially when it comes to the Bible, how much was taken out and what was rewritten to reflect the society at the time and by the person who was actually doing the writing. And right. Then ask yourself what is real. And most of all, believe in your own faith. Kathy, thank you so much for being with us today. Have an amazing, amazing year.
Thank you. You too.
Don't go away. We're going to talk to you about how to organize your life next.